And our last case this morning is United States v. Plowman. Case number 11-3781. Mr. Voiles.
Good morning. My name is James Voiles, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Lincoln Plowman. In August of 2009, an undercover FBI investigation began on Mr. Plowman, who was an Indianapolis police officer and an Indianapolis city councilman. The investigation centered on Mr. Plowman's work on the city council, where he was involved in the zoning aspect of the council. In September of 2010, Mr. Plowman was indicted by the government on the basis of this investigation, which lasted 5 months. The government filed with the court a pretrial motion in limine to prevent Mr. Plowman from using the entrapment defense, and the court granted this motion. The district court ruling was done without a finding as to Mr. Plowman's predisposition. As the court knows, that in the decision of U.S. versus Pavallo, decided by this court, the court indicated that the reason this court says that it's sensible to begin the entrapment inquiry with predisposition is that the level of predisposition informs the nature and level of the government that must be identified to warrant the entrapment instruction. We, on behalf of Mr. Plowman, provided what we believe to be more than a scintilla of evidence in our proffer to the district court in anticipation and in rebuttal to, really, the motion in limine provided by the government. We indicated that there was legitimate work being done by Mr. Plowman on behalf of the investigation. There were repeated contacts in a five-month period. There were numerous telephone taps and telephone and oral presentations that were recorded during meetings between Mr. Plowman and the FBI informant, where clearly the contacts were almost 99% caused to be done by the government informant.
Let me ask you before we get further into that. Is it sufficient to just provide a lawyer's narrative? Our cases talk about producing evidence to support a lack of predisposition and inducement.
Your Honor, I think that the evidence that we proffered to the court in our proffer that we made in response to the motion in limine that the government felt was done in accordance with what I believe Judge McKinney wanted at the time. There was no indication that we should provide that in a oral hearing or a motion where we would present Mr. Plowman or we would present other evidence. But I think that it was clear that the proffer that the court was interested in was a proffer on paper in response to the government's motion in limine.
One of the key factors, of course, is who initially suggested the criminal activity.
Correct.
And the August 11th, 2009 transcript has Plowman, this is the first time he's met the agent.
Right, that's at the restaurant when he's introduced.
I think I could give you the reach around and you could throw me some money. I understand your position to be that we should not look at that because that was not before the district court before trial.
Correct.
But how can we close our eyes to that?
Well, I don't think you can close your eyes to it, Judge, and I'll tell you why. I think that most of these cases are so fact-sensitive, as you know, and it turns on the issue of credibility. And as decided when the U.S. Supreme Court said that we have to determine that most of the time the entrapment goes to the jury because they're more likely than not to make determinations about credibility.
Well, this isn't credibility. That's the transcript of what your guy says in the very first meeting, right?
Well, I think it's credibility because you got to take that conversation in context. The conversation was Mr. Plowman was introduced by another individual who was the real contact the FBI agent had made. And during the course of that contact, there's kind of a dialogue that goes on about Mr. Plowman being someone who worked on the city council. But you have to take in context what the FBI agent had been told, and we never were able to get at what I call the second informant, the informant who set the agent up to meet with Mr. Plowman, what he told the agent about Mr. Plowman that caused those kind of conversations to take place. We never knew what that said. And where Mr. Plowman was responding to things that the agent was requesting, because he's the one that introduced the issue of coming into Indianapolis at the five-star strip club that he wanted to build, and he wanted it to be kind of a unique event in that city. Now, Mr. Plowman had legitimate work in other venues where he clearly indicated that his work was legitimate on things that he was doing, and I don't think it's out of context for him to have said, I'd be happy to help you on this too, because he considered himself, in the case where he was working for PT Show Club, as someone who was involved in doing that work, reporting it on as 1099 income when he was working in a capacity outside of law enforcement. And so I don't think it's inconsistent. He was happy to help and certainly offered him an ability to help.
Well, that sounds a lot less like entrapment and just a lack of intent, right?
Well, the entrapment really kind of begins from that conversation and considers now over the whole period of time, because you'll see that the officer began utilizing kind of this relationship. I mean, pretty soon it was buddy, it was pal, let me buy dinner, let's make sure we go to the best restaurants. All of those things take place during this kind of five-month period. And even though the government has indicated in their brief this is not a very significant amount of money, $5,000, but it was consistent with how Mr. Plowman had been dealing with his other business interest in terms of his work outside the police department.
Speaking of those other businesses, was there some reason why they targeted him?
You want my assumptions?
Well, I assume there was.
Yes,
he'd be vulnerable in this context.
There was a task force, and still is, in the Indianapolis area that were looking at what we call corruption. They were looking at corruption within law enforcement. They were looking at corruption within areas involving prosecutorial corruption, and my belief that this was an event that happened because they were looking at police, they were looking at prosecutors, they were looking at all in these areas, that information came to their attention, that they thought that Mr. Plowman might be someone who would fall into that category, Your Honor. That's my assumption. I'm into my rebuttal time, so I'll be happy to step aside. Thank you.
Mr. Shanker.
Thank you. May it please the Court. Vijay Shanker for the United States. Your Honors, I'd like to begin with my colleague's proposition that the district court's pretrial ruling here violated the Pallotto decision. We would submit that the Pallotto decision did not change this court's well-established law and framework in analyzing pretrial entrapment claims. In Pallotto, the court specifically said that where there is insufficient evidence of inducement, such as where the government did nothing more than offer a standard sting deal, there is no need to consider predisposition. And it said it again, the court may begin and end the inquiry with government inducement if it is confident that the government did no more than offer a standard market deal in a sting type of operation. And moreover, Judge Wood, who wrote the Pallotto decision, also wrote the Stallworth decision, which was issued the very prior day, the day before Pallotto was issued. And in Stallworth, the court analyzed inducement first and said, only if we find government inducement need we proceed to predisposition. So I don't think Pallotto changed the law in this circuit that a defendant has the burden of establishing both government inducement and his or her lack of predisposition. In addition, Pilato is distinguishable from this case because in that case, the district court required the defendant to show extraordinary inducement. And because the defendant could not do that in the district court's view, it found no entrapment without reaching predisposition. Of course, extraordinary inducement, as this court's cases have made clear, is required only if the defendant has been shown to be predisposed. And so for that reason, it was error for the court to have not considered predisposition. Here, the district court, and we would submit correctly, found that there was no inducement at all, not just no extraordinary inducement, no inducement at all, and in that situation, it did not need to reach the predisposition inquiry. Judge Hamilton, I just wanted to point out, you noted that the question of who initially suggested the criminal activity is discussed in the transcripts, and that wasn't before the district court here pre-trial. Obviously, the transcripts were not before the district court pre-trial, but in the government's proffer was the factual assertion that Mr. Plowman was the first to suggest this deal.
Right, but we've got, I mean, look, if you've got a proffer from the defense that directly contradicts that, that starts to sound like a jury question.
Okay? Well, absolutely.
But my concern here is that we've got these, you know, we've got the lawyer's talk in the proffers, and then we've got the evidence, and the evidence seems to me, frankly, to indicate pretty clearly that Mr. Plowman was the first one to propose money in exchange for influence. So procedurally, I guess I don't see a whole lot of point in a remand, for example, to reconsider where we know what that evidence is now.
Right. That's right, Your Honor. I would only add that the district court here was required, and it expressly stated that it did take Mr. Plowman's factual assertions as true. But as Your Honor touched on a little bit, factual assertions, even if they're not borne out by specific evidence, and we acknowledge there was no evidentiary hearing here, but they are distinguishable from mere bare conclusory allegations, summary allegations by an attorney. Mr. Plowman did not dispute in his proffer that he was the first to mention the actual exchange of cash, the $5,000 and $1,000. He never disputed that. He disputed as a very general conclusory matter that he was the first to bring up this activity because, of course, it was a government sting. The government did introduce this operation. But the fact of who first proposed the criminal activity, that is the exchange of money for official action, was Mr. Plowman, and he never denied that in his proffer. And again, as you said, it's borne out absolutely clearly in the actual evidence.
Would you agree, Mr. Shanker, that the defendant does not need to show extraordinary inducement to get an entrapment instruction?
Your Honor, I think in light of Pilato, without a showing of predisposition, a defendant cannot be required to show extraordinary inducement. Now, a lot
Wait
of
a minute. Let me think that through slowly. Say it one more time.
Okay. Yep. Let me do it a little differently. If the government has shown that a defendant is predisposed, the defendant to be entitled to an entrapment instruction or present entrapment evidence can still get there by showing extraordinary inducement by the government. Now, in the absence of any finding on predisposition, for a district court to require a showing of extraordinary inducement in and of itself, in light of Pilato, would be wrong. But that's not what the district court did here. It said there was no inducement. Inducement.
Is that right? I mean, no inducement at all? Here's the $5,000. So.
But that's the offer of a deal, the solicitation of criminal activity, a sting operation, this court has said innumerable times, does not constitute inducement. Inducement
kind of market rate, but I'm not sure that there's an established market in Chicago or Indianapolis for cocaine and heroin, I'm sure. I'm not sure we've got an established market, at least with the Indianapolis City County Council, I hope, for official favors.
Well, we have at least, maybe not a widespread market rate, but at least a rate for Mr. Plowman established by his prior conduct in this case, where he was receiving tens of thousands of dollars a year in exchange for his official action. And so the district court could very reasonably have concluded that the offer of $5,000 in exchange for his official action was not some sort of excessive payment.
Well, what is it that his background? I asked his client, his counsel, was there some suspicion or knowledge even of this fellow doing these things with other enterprises or something else, so they knew he would be a good target?
Your Honor, I apologize. I'm actually not aware. It's not in the record, and I'm not privy to what brought the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office investigatory functions to the attention of Mr. Plowman. It's just not in the record. Now, we know that the prosecutors knew of these prior dealings with Sean Ryan and PT's Show Club, and I think that's what my colleague was getting at, that this must have come out through those types of investigations. But again, that's not in the record, and I can't state that as our position. If the court has no further questions, we'll rest on our brief.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Boyles, you have 2 minutes left.
2 minutes?
Yes.
Indicating to question that Judge Hamilton had, I think the evidence in looking at the transcripts showed that Mr. Plowman repeatedly suggested to the agent that his best course of action would be to buy an existing club. An existing club would not need to be rezoned. Things that he thought that were in the best interest of the agent who was representing himself as someone who wanted to build this club. And so I think those are inconsistent with he's the one that was actively engaged in criminal conduct. He suggested to the agent that he might even purchase a business called Dancers. So it's an entirely plausible to have that suggestion that Mr. Plowman, during the course of the five-month investigation, is repeatedly suggesting to the agents things different. But also, as Judge Hamilton requested in that August 11th meeting, Mr. Hamilton's really kind of, and it's through the tapes, said that he is someone who wanted to earn a fee, that he thought he was actually earning money, that he was doing things because he was setting up a lot of these events himself. In other words, he was taking the agent to these locations. They were looking at, he ultimately hired counsel for the agent so that he could have his own zoning opinion. He also worked with him to secure a real estate to give other locations. So there were things that Mr. Plowman was doing that would be very consistent with someone earning a legitimate fee for those things, not setting off an opportunity to begin a bribery on August 11th with an undercover agent. Are there any additional questions?
I guess not. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and that concludes today's